everybody. Welcome to Theater Schmooze from Alliance for Jewish Theater, where we chat with Jewish theater makers from around the world about their art, Judaism, and vision for theater's future. I'm your host, Danielle Levski. Today, we'll be talking with Alex Chester, who is an actor and editor-in-chief based in New York City. It is such an honor to have you on our podcast today, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my honor.
I wanted to start off by discussing one of your upcoming performance projects. So you recently joined Randy Andy's, a postmodern homage to the Andrews sisters with a rotating cast of women.
Yes.
At the East Village Supper Club in Pangaea, right?
Yes, that's been where our last two performances are. I think they have a performance coming up at Don't Tell Mama, but that's another cast, and a couple of other ones, I think, like in Connecticut, I want to say, maybe Massachusetts, but that's also another different cast. But I've done two performances at Pangaea.
Okay, very cool. And they're traveling. That's also really interesting.
Yeah.
I noticed you mentioned in an interview for Shout Out LA that you're the only Asian American that's part of this group.
Yes.
I thought that was very interesting because for their time, the Andrews sisters were unique in show business for their Jewish and Yiddish identity.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. As a person of intersectional identities entering this musical group, I'm curious to hear what you would like to see evolve in this group's dynamics and makeup.
I would love to see more diversity and inclusion in the group. At this moment, being the only mixed API in the group, and I believe there are two, maybe three other women of color. One of the other girls that's in my little group, she's, I believe, of Latinx and Jewish descent. So that's cool. But I would just like to see it a little more broadened and a little more representative of the unique landscape of the United States. That's what I would like to see. And I think they're trying. They just brought in a bunch of new people. I was one of the new people because before it was very white.
Yeah. Was that like a shift that was initiated because of bringing more folks of color into the room? Or is that just something that like audience members noticed and were like, hey, you have an all white group here?
I'm going to say out the audience members noticed as they are playing very specific, you know, a lot of these supper clubs and maybe these little cabaret spaces tend to be very white centric to begin with. So I doubt it was the audience being like, hey, why isn't there some people of color on your stage? I would have been very surprised. But as I do not know the conversations that were had, I know that the current director is incredibly inclusive. And I've worked with her in the past and she's wonderful. So I think that they're just trying to grow along with the changes that are happening in the theater world right now, which is good to see.
Yeah, that's wonderful to see them responding to changes in the theater world right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That actually takes me very nicely to my next question, which is about your position as editor-in-chief of Mixed Asian Media. In that same interview in Shout Out LA, you mentioned how crucial it is for you and your volunteer staff to work smarter, not harder.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about what that looks like nowadays in a post-pandemic world with everything reopening, new connections, opportunities around every corner, all of that jazz?
Absolutely. You know, I think we are still trying to figure out what that means for us because most of us already are in the entertainment industry as actors and performers. So we're so used to constantly saying yes to everything, right? And even as an actor, I'm learning to say no to projects that maybe I just like, why am I going to learn 40 pages of thing when I do not feel like I am right for this or stuff like that, or it's just not jiving with me. Or why am I saying yes to this other free project? So as you know, being as editor in chief for Mixed Asian Media, we were saying yes to everything, which has been great. And I think it's really helped place us on the map that we are currently. But now that we are in this position where we are the leading media platform for mixed APIs, we can say no to things that maybe necessarily don't align with our schedules, don't align with where, you know, just what issue we're at magazine wise, or maybe we're just all really busy and just one more project is just going to like drive us nuts. So we are trying to say no to things. That is hard though. I did have to say no to interviewing Andrew Koji. And I was kind of like, yes, I said no to this. Kind of proud of that moment because he is going to be in the new Snake Eyes film with Henry Golding. And we had the opportunity to interview him, but unless we were pitching like a photo shoot with him, because we just had him 2 issues ago for Warrior. And so the PR group was like, I don't, you know, he's really hot. He's really hot right now. Are you sure you want to say no? I was like, yeah, I'm sorry. It's not within our bandwidth to publish a standalone piece without a photo shoot. And we did just have him. So I had to say no. So I was actually proud of that moment of saying no to something. But it's hard because you want to say yes as much as possible. So you get these opportunities and you create these relationships with, you know, the celebrities, quote unquote, and then the media companies and the PR companies. It's hard. It's hard to say no, but we are trying.
Yeah. Well, especially, I'm of course. And because the mission of Mixed Asian Media is to uplift marginalized voices in the AAPI community, it's even, I imagine it's even harder to say no because you're like, this is a space that we're creating to uplift these voices. And we have to say no to certain voices. And that's really hard to struggle with, I imagine.
It's so hard. It is, especially, you know, we are a quarterly magazine and I would love for us to eventually maybe monthly, but it's because everyone is a volunteer based staff. And, you know, we're trying to get to the point where we pay our writers and our admin staff, but we're not there yet. So it's really hard to, you know, say yes all the time, especially to like maybe if it's just a one-off, something that's coming up like a small theater festival or a small up-and-coming writer, and then their festival happens to like fall in between issues, it's really hard for us to then scramble and try to put together a pop-up issue unless we happen to have like 3 to 6 other articles that are within that time frame. So it sucks, but I'm hoping that as we expand and as maybe money starts coming in, we'll actually be able to maybe just publish once in a while instead of just every quarter. It will actually maybe be once a month or weekly. Who knows? I am open.
That's wonderful. And I imagine there will be a lot of opportunities coming up for the Mixed Asian Media Fest in September.
Yes, I am so excited for that. We are in the process of solidifying our speakers and events, and it's going to be fire. I'm really like looking at our master deck and our master sheet of like all of our contacts and people have said yes. I'm like, wow, this is our first festival and we've gotten X, Y, and Z. Go us.
Nice. Are there any like little details you can reveal to the Alliance for Jewish Theater community?
Oh gosh. I wish I could. I'm like, I want to, I'm just not sure if I should because it's sure. not like set in it hasn't happened yet. The mm-hmm. recordings but we are negotiating with like Disney and we have an up and coming director who her film won at Sundance and we'll probably be showcasing her film. So we have some really cool things like that.
Wow. It seems to spread the breadth of the industry. That's really cool. Nice.
Yeah. We even have Scott Sickles is going to be producing one of his plays for us. And that's very exciting. So it's not just film. It's music, it's theater, it's podcasting, and of course, film, documentaries, etc.
How did you and your team come to the structure of this festival, like creating all these different venues of media and performance in it?
Part of it was because we constantly were having people reaching out to us saying, hey, I dropped a song. Hey, I have a poem. Hey, I have a fashion show. Just randomly people pinging us and being like, hey, can you feature this? And it just sometimes wouldn't align, you know, with whatever issue we're on. So I was like, hey, let's do a festival. It'd be fun. And I was thinking something small, like, we'll just upload it to YouTube and then we can have like a Zoom and we can all watch it together. No. It's turned into an actual honest to God festival where we had a film freeway and people submitted and we have judges. And that's in part because of my producer, Michaela, and one of our other, we call them MAMF girls, Laura and Lola. She also works at CAM, which is one of the oldest running film festivals for Asian Americans. So it's because of those two that we were able to expand it and actually make it an honest to God film festival or festival.
Wow, that's excellent. Oh, that's so cool. Wow.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. I'm really hoping this will become a yearly thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to know, you're creating so much space for people in the AAPI community and people of various intersecting identities. And I know that you yourself have been working in the entertainment industry from a young age and live at intersections of several identities, being Jewish, being AAPI,
yes,
a theater artist, a writer, a performer, and more. I'm curious, stepping a little bit further back into the foreground, what kinds of changes do you want to see in the Jewish community regarding being AAPI?
No worries. We're still working on the acronyms ourselves because it's just, yeah, so no worries on that. I would love to see more inclusivity. What does it mean to be Jewish? It doesn't necessarily mean like Ashkenazi. There's so many other flavors. And especially I've been working with this group called Lunar Project, and they are an Asian Jewish group, and they've connected to me to other Jews of color. And it's just this beautiful rainbow of people. And I would just would love for that to become more mainstream and not just kind of like the, more mainstream. I would like to see that more integrated into what it means to be Jewish and to be not having to constantly explain ourselves in a traditional Jewish setting and not have to prove our Jewishness. That's what I would like to see. And so like when there are Jewish plays or Jewish musicals being told, that it's not just lighter skinned people, that it is all different colors and skin tones and eye shapes that are able to be in that space as well. That's what I would like to see. And I think it's slowly turning that way, but it's never fast enough.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot from a lot of people and had discussions of my own about Ashkenormativity in Jewish spaces. Have you found, in addition to Lunar, we could talk more about Lunar, but other spaces that have been open to other identities outside of Ashkenormative Jews?
Not yet, just because I haven't honestly had the time to really dive into those realms yet, just because of all the work I'm doing with mixed Asian media. I would love for me to have that time to really explore more of my Jewish side within those communities. There's a few of us that are adults that from Lunar that weren't bat mitzvahed. And there's this wonderful Asian Jewish rabbi here, and I think she's in Brooklyn, that's offered to bat mitzvah us. So I think that might be kind of cool to do. We'll see if it happens. No one's asked again about this, but we were all in the Zoom meeting and that was something that came up, was us wanting to do that. And she was like, yeah, I'll do it. So maybe next year, or at least let me get through the festival and then I can maybe DM her and be like, hey, I actually really am serious about this. I would love to learn more about my Jewish side in that respect.
Yeah. Oh, that's so, so cool. Oh my gosh. We're going to take a little break and then I have some more questions about Lunar because it's such a fantastic project and I would love to hear more about your involvement with it.
Cool.
Thank you, Alex. We're going to take a short break with a message from our sponsors.
Thanks for listening to Theater Schmooze from Alliance for Jewish Theater. I'm Jeremy Aluma, the executive director. And I want to tell you about AJT's upcoming 2021 virtual conference. The 2021 virtual conference will be on Sunday, October 24th, Monday, October 25th, and Tuesday, October 26th. And we'll have several events each day, so make sure to save the dates. More information will be coming out in August, so check out our website, alljewishtheater.org, or email me at jeremy@alljewishtheater.org. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of Theater Schmooze, Episode 6.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to our interview with Alex Chester. So, coming back to the Lunar Film Project, tell me a little bit about the projects that you've been working on with them. What have been really exciting to you?
So, it was really cool just getting a chance to meet all these other Asian Jews of, you know, varying ages and identities. And we had a big Zoom meeting, and that was really fun. I believe they're also on the What's Up app. Every now and then, I'll check that group out, but it tends to overwhelm me with, like, you know, 100 messages a day from everyone. I'm just like, I can't do this. This millennial can't do that. So, but Jen from Lunar Asian Jews who started it, it's just been amazing and such a great leader. And it was really cool just talking about our identities, talking about the intersectionality of Asian and Jewishness. And we had a couple sessions where we recorded like family history, you know, talked about food, all of that. And that was really cool. Just seeing how similar everyone's stories are and where they crossed over.
Yeah. Oh, that's so
wonderful. They're actually going to be in our film festival as well. So that's kind of neat.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Are they creating a project specifically for the film festival, or is it something that's...
It's something that we recorded previously. I think they submitted a couple of the episodes of the Asian Jews, Jewish, of their... They had like, I think, 5 or 6 episodes, and they're all on YouTube, but we're getting a couple of them for our festival.
That's excellent. That is such a wonderful series. We featured it a couple times as part of AJT's Tikkuno Laman Theater series.
Oh, cool.
It's a social media series we have that like highlights underserved identities in the Jewish community and like talks about various stories that don't necessarily fall into an Ashkenormative narrative. So
I love it.
Their videos have been so cool to share and watch. I'm curious what changes or perspective shifts that you would like to see in the AAPI community in regards to being Jewish.
I mean, for me, it's also, once again, as I have to prove my Jewishness in a Jewish space, I also have to prove my Asianness in an Asian space. Mm. You know, it's easier now because I definitely am very vocal about it. So I don't necessarily have to come with like trumpets blazing. But before being so vocal and being so within, like engaged in the community, it was definitely like, yes, I know how to use chopsticks. You know, it's just silly things like that. Or my dad's Japanese, just really having to prove my Asianness just because I also don't speak Japanese. My dad didn't speak Japanese. So just having to constantly prove that. I would love to see more, you know, intersectionality of the, because I think Jewish and Asian communities are very similar, especially within the family dynamic. We're very family oriented. We're very community oriented. And I think that's one of the reasons why you maybe do see a lot of Jewish Asian Jews. If that makes sense. So I think I would love just to see more collaborations within the communities, because I really think that there is so much crossover between both communities.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. There's also like a significant amount of Jewish populations from Asia, right? Like there, I've read about like various populations in Thailand and Japan and China. Like there's whole Jewish communities centered around them. Yeah.
Which I think is fascinating. I don't know enough on it, but it's fascinating. And I think it just goes to show, like, you know, everyone's everywhere. We're just people.
Especially Jews. We're just like, you know, we're little nomadic humans. We're all over the place. So
yes. I was in Isla Mujeres, which is a tiny island off of Cancun. And there was a synagogue in this tiny, tiny little island.
Wow.
Like random, just random. But I was like, how cool is that?
Huh. That's incredible.
Yeah.
The places you meet your people. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
That actually makes me curious. Do you find Jewishness being an inherent part of your work as a performer and as a journalist?
I think because I identify as a Jewish woman first and foremost, it is always there. And I try to be a good person and do good for others, whether within my work or just in day-to-day life, whatever that means. And I think that's part of being Jewish, is to do good and be good. So I think that no matter what, I carry that with me. It may not necessarily be something that's in the front of my brain constantly that I'm thinking about, but I think that that is something I always try to lead with, is what will benefit the community, my community, first and foremost, before anything else.
That's wonderful. And I'm curious if, when looking back at your projects, do you see Jewish themes like subtly appearing throughout your work? Like you're looking at something, you're like, oh yeah, I didn't intend to include that kernel of Jewish culture or history, but somehow it ended up there.
I think it was always intentional, because when I was producing cabarets called We So Hapa, it was all about just being mixed and or not fitting the casting box. And that's what I wanted to showcase for New York City. And we had a whole fiddler segment, because there was several of us that were like, hey, we're Jewish too. Let's show that we can sing the songs. So it was intentional in that sense. otherwise, I honestly don't know. Like, anytime I've set to like pen to paper or wanted to write an article about Jewish identity and Asian identity in the overlapping areas, it's always been very intentional.
Mm.
I guess if there is something that I didn't realize, I'd have to really go back and look. But I really do try just to lead from a place of like love and community first.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. Which are also very Jewish values. Makes sense.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little earlier that spaces that you enter, you often identify yourself as AAPI. And I'm curious if you feel the need to do this as like a Jewish and AAPI person in different spaces that you go into, specifically in theater circles.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Whether it's an Asian space in theater or a Jewish space in theater, I definitely feel like I have to make my presence known that I identify these ways. Otherwise, it's very much the, what are you? Why are you here? Sort of looks you get, at least from fellow auditioners.
Yeah.
And I have fallen victim to that as well for other people that of mixed descent. Like, and I feel terrible for it. One of my friends now, we were both at this callback for a Broadway show. And I was like, why is this white girl wearing a black wig and has eyeliner on trying to look Asian? She's half. And I just thought she was white. And that was totally my mistake. So I think, you know, that was a good lesson for me as well, that just because you don't necessarily present a certain way, you can still be that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I'm trying to be very much more aware of, especially when I do enter these spaces, that you don't know the person next to you what they identify is and what their racial makeup is just because they present a certain way. So I try to be more mindful of that. And that was a very good lesson for myself. But I do feel that depending on the audition, I do have to, like, I have a brown wig that I wear depending on what it is, or a long black wig depending on what it is, just so the casting doesn't have to work so hard to figure out what I am. That's usually who I'm having to really prove whatever to, is this casting. Because, you know, I've been doing this since I was a kid, and I come from when we had to do black and white photos, and I kind of feel like that was almost better. Gosh, I sound so old saying that. I feel like with the black and white photos, you had your black and white photo. You didn't know what the color of hair was, really. You didn't know anything else. It was just very simple. And now casting wants the edgy look. They want, you know, the nerdy look, the business attire, school teacher, you know, teenager. And you have to have all these freaking headshots. And back in, like, when I was a kid, it was like, here's my black and white headshot. Thanks.
Wow, that's such a good point. That reminds me a lot of, I don't know if you've seen this Instagram account, #booked.
No.
Oh, it's phenomenal. And so biting in humor. It's two black women who are actors in New York City. And they talk about going for casting auditions, being two black women and going for these roles that are, it's so cringy. Ooh. It's so cringy, the things that they ask them to do in these rooms. They kind of make fun of it, but they're also calling a light to light how ridiculous it is, the types of ways they're meant to present.
Yeah.
Really racist stereotypes they're asked to inhibit is part of their audition.
It's terrible. I've had friends that have told me horror stories, and I've had similar stories for the Asian stuff.
Yeah. Would you be comfortable sharing one of them with us?
Oh, sure. One of them was for a play, and the dialogue was all in English. But then it said that she would speak this in Japanese. Well, I don't speak Japanese, and it's not something that you're just going to like pick up and do. So I made sure that casting knew when I went to room, hey, I don't speak Japanese. Obviously, I'm willing to learn if you get me a coach. And he's like, oh, no, just make it up. You can just make it up. I went, make up Japanese. And being the stupid young 20-something-year-old that I was, I went ahead and did it. If I had someone said that to me now, I probably would have laughed in their face and left. But back then, you really couldn't say no. So that was one instance. Another instance was several instances of, can you do that with an Asian accent? And like, Asian accent. What does that mean? What does that mean? So those are always fun, of like Asian accent, like Japanese, Korean, Taiwanese, like Thai. No, just Asian it up. Okay, great.
Ooh,
yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, so many of those. It's, you know, and growing up, I was often told I'm not Asian enough. And then like, so my, the casting and agents would be like, okay, you need to dye your hair black. You got to make yourself look more Asian, or we got to try to make you look more white passing. And it just could never like just be me. It's definitely changed, you know, and it's good to see, but I have noticed within the TV film arena that things are kind of digressing a little bit as far as now, once again, you have to know a martial art and you have to speak perfect English, but you also have to know an Asian language. It's not just, you don't get just to tell human stories. You have to be like this ass-kicking Asian person that, you know, happens to have either a mystical power and does, you know, kung fu or something. And it's very frustrating.
Yeah, it's feeding into a lot of stereotypes I thought we were trying to overcome, past.
I thought so too. And I'm seeing it more and more in breakdowns. And I just don't know, you know, yeah, we've come so far, but at the same time, we really haven't.
Yeah. Ugh, that's frustrating. Let's end the podcast on a positive note. I would love to ask you about...
Okay.
We spent a year in isolation, right? In this pandemic, a lot of people had time to process their own identities, their relationship to people of other identities. Mm. We had the really incredible Black Lives Matter movement just burst all over the world last summer. What is something coming out of this year of slowing down and time and processing? What is something that you want to bring into your world as a performer, an artist, a writer, an organizer, and push forward?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think more safe spaces to just be and not having to feel like you have to be something that you're not.
Mm.
I feel like, especially within the theater realm and entertainment industry realm, we're constantly having to be on, whatever that looks like to the individual. And it's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting. And having that year off not having to be on was wonderful. And it's gotten to the point now where when I do get an audition, I kind of have a little mini panic attack. And I would love for us to have more conversations about safe spaces to not have to be the best in the room, if that makes sense. Like, we all want to do a good job, but there's so much tied up into this, whether it's FOMO or it's just you have to be better than everyone else mentality, that it's just such a dog eat dog, you know? And I would love for us to do away with that a little bit more. And I'm not saying that like we show up and we're just like slobs and like just lax and, you know, partying in the rehearsal space, but just feeling safe and heard and seen and not having to worry if we have a bad day, that we are human. And I think that's something that I would love to see within the entertainment world and theater world, is that we are human beings. We have bad days. It's okay to have a bad day, and that it's okay not to be on necessarily, whatever that looks like to you.
Yeah. That is such a good point. Thank you for sharing that with us, Alex.
Thank you. That was a great question.
And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Theater Schmooze. A special thanks to Danny Debner, our producer, Ilya Levinson and Alex Kaufman, the composers of our theme music, Jeremy Aluma, the executive director of Alliance for Jewish Theater, and the entire Alliance for Jewish Theater community. If you like what you've heard today, support this podcast and all of our initiatives towards connecting Jewish theater makers by making a tax-deductible donation to Alliance for Jewish Theater at alljewishtheater.org or joining as a member. Make sure to give us a review on iTunes and follow Alliance for Jewish Theater on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming Jewish theater events, group meetings, and news in our world. I'm Danielle Levski, and I'll see you next time. L'chaim.